So good morning, everyone, and welcome to our Sunday set. I'm Lyndall Johnson, one of the Sims local Dharma leaders, as I think pretty much everybody here already knows, and I'm going to be leading the meditation and giving the Dharma talk today in this sort of series of two discussions about renunciation. So I think that pretty much everybody here, I don't think we have anybody brand new this morning. I kind of recognize all of you here today. So I want to offer you a very warm welcome. It's really good to see you. Especially thank you for showing up on this really, really beautiful morning when I think of a lot of us are just eager to get outside and enjoy the rare sunshine that we're having today. So thanks for your presence. There's a lot to talk about on this topic of renunciation. And I want to make sure that I don't take too much time. Oh, here we have another. Lauren saying good morning. Robin singing this morning. Yes, beautiful. And the importance of feeling lack with respect to renunciation. Well, I think we'll hear more about this as we go on this morning. I'm really grateful to Ajahn Suchito for giving me lots of good information and things to talk about in this talk. So, as all of you no, I think this year we're doing a series on the paramis, and our topic for this month is nekama, or renunciation. So for those of you who were here last week, we started this topic of renunciation by talking about it in one way that Ajahn Suchito characterizes it, as one of the three foundational practices, along with Dana and Sila, that help us to live lives that benefit ourselves and others, and also that prepare us to really get on board for the Buddha's liberation teachings. So we talked about how renunciation supports us in our efforts to live a kind and a generous and an ethical life. And we mentioned how we can practice renunciation in several ways, by refraining from harmful actions, by refraining from getting caught up in unskillful mind states. Although we can't really stop them from arising, we can maybe refrain from, you know, continuing with them. By refraining from some activities that are perfectly okay, so we can make time and space for activities that are even more beneficial. And to simply make our lives more simple. And we also talked about how the Buddha himself acknowledged that renunciation is a really challenging practice, and that before we can truly appreciate the value of this parami, we really have to investigate the disadvantages of sense pleasures and the benefits of refraining for ourselves, so we really understand why we're refraining through our own experience. So this week, I'm going to expand on how renunciation contributes to our practice. And as Ajahn Suchito discusses in his book, not only does it support us in living a life of kindness and generosity, but it can be a really important doorway to wisdom and to understanding the very deepest truths of the Dharma. So in his book, Ajahn Suchito says that together, Dana, Sila, and renunciation help us to build a strong vehicle to cross the flood. So this you know, strong sense of a generous and kind life. But that renunciation goes even further and pushes the boat away from the ground, that the floods break over towards a place of safety. And renunciation can take us to that place of safety because it can, you know, really fundamentally change our way of seeing the world. It goes against our tendency to pursue gain It goes against our assumption that happiness comes through getting and keeping what we want. Ajahn Suchito goes on to say that if we don't challenge this assumption, we'll never really be able to find freedom because we'll always be chasing whatever it is we feel that we don't quite have. Oops. So one way that renunciation helps us to really see the fallacy of our thinking when we assume that the key to happiness is getting what we want is by giving us an opportunity to really look deeply into the nature of wanting itself. And when we practice renunciation, we get a chance to feel the suffering that comes with craving, and also to feel the release that comes from that suffering when we're able to let go of the wanting. And, you know, when we're doing this kind of practice, we're really investigating the second noble truth. Is it really true that craving is the root of suffering? That's the question we're attempting to answer for ourselves when we practice renunciation. Now, we always hear that craving is a cause of suffering, and maybe when we hear this, you know, we nod our heads and say, yeah. But really, most of us have a lot of resistance to this truth. We really want to believe that if we could just get what we want, we would be happy. Permanently. And of course, the problem with that is that we can't always get what we want, for one thing. And then even when we do get what we want, we can't keep it forever because things change. And so do we. So one of the things, you know, is this aspect of understanding why craving leads to suffering. Because it leads to endless desires that can never be fulfilled. So that's part of it, you know, really recognizing that. But there's another aspect to this too. Oops. And this is the fact that wanting itself is really not all that pleasant if we stop to notice it. We tend to think that it's pleasant, and when we're fantasizing about something we hope will happen or we hope we'll get, and we're lost in all those daydreams about how great it's going to be, and those feelings of excitement and anticipation of planning to get this thing and enjoy this thing. Now, all of that feels really pleasant, really pleasant. But if we bring our attention back to this, you know, fantasy and being lost in our fantasies to the actual feeling of the wanting itself, we might find that, no, it isn't really so nice. It definitely isn't so nice when our desires are thwarted and we can't get what we want. We know that is not very nice. But the more subtle wanting can be unpleasant too. If wanting is present, we're not really content with things as they are. There's some level of dissatisfaction, even if it's really, really subtle. And if you're in a really pleasant situation, it isn't so much that you're wanting something else, but more that you're wanting this pleasant situation to last, and maybe worrying that it won't, trying to figure out how to hold on to it. And so, even though things are very pleasant, this feeling of tension can creep into this pleasant situation. And once that tension creeps in there, of this worrying about keeping it, it isn't quite so pleasant. All of this dissatisfaction and worry really separates us from whatever is going on in the present. So not only do we feel pain and dissatisfaction when we aren't getting what we want, we can't really enjoy and appreciate the pleasant things we do experience because we're so anxious to hang on to them. And, you know, kind of crazy. So when we practice renunciation and intentionally and willingly refrain from fulfilling some desire that we could fulfill if we wanted to, this allows us to really feel that experience of wanting. That restlessness, the dissatisfaction, the tension, the longing. It's unpleasant. And we might also realize when we let ourselves feel the unpleasantness of wanting that sometimes we go after that object of wanting, you know, not so much because that thing is really so wonderful, but just to get rid of that unpleasant feeling of wanting. Now is that crazy? Now that really is crazy. But if we can just hang in there, if we can just be with that feeling of wanting, we find that it doesn't last forever. Maybe something else happens that claims our attention, or the feeling just fades and something else takes its place. And more we see that getting hooked into that feeling of wanting and of craving, it just isn't worth it. The mind starts to see the suffering and is more and more willing to just let it go and be with what is, instead of rushing towards that next better thing. And it's not like any of this is automatic. This is a lesson that we have to keep relearning over and over. And I've definitely found that to be the case for me and had an experience like this just recently, where when I got into this craving for chocolate cream pie. Now, I saw these pies on sale at the grocery store, and I think this is how it started. And for a while, I just dismissed it. I didn't buy one that time when I saw it. I went home, but I kept thinking about it. That chocolate cream pie. It's on sale. And I kept thinking about it. And finally, a couple days later, I needed to go to the store to get cat litter, which of course is absolutely critical. And there was that pie. So I bought one. And part of me was thinking, as I bought this, I might as well just get it. If I don't, it's going to keep bugging me forever. So I bought the pie home. I had a piece, and it was fine. It was good, but it wasn't that good. So really, it's like, what was the big deal? And I realized, it wasn't really about the pie so very much. It was about being caught in that feeling of wanting. So most likely, we'll go through these cycles like this over and over again. But eventually, though, I think it does make a difference when we begin to understand for ourselves this unpleasantness and kind of craziness of these cycles of wanting. And we begin to get disenchanted with a life that's built around constantly wanting this next better thing. It might take a while, but eventually it does make a difference. And, we explore this whenever we refrain from some habitual pleasure or pattern of behavior, but it can be helpful to do it in a really intentional way. To choose something we like to do and often do, and then just give it up for a period of time. It might be some habit you really want to break, but it might be something else that's, a lot more innocuous. Sylvia Boorstein gives an interesting example in her book, in her chapter on renunciation. And in this chapter, she talks about how at one point she gave an especially generous donation to an organization she supports from her finances that she shares with her husband, but she didn't check in with him or make sure it was okay with him. And so because she didn't do that, she decided she'd make up for it by refraining from buying fresh flowers for the house every week for a year. So she did this, and even when the year had passed, and even though her husband assured her even before the year had passed that as far as she was concerned, it wasn't that important, and if she wanted to buy fresh flowers, she should go ahead and buy the flowers, she continued to refrain from buying the flowers. And she continued, not because there was anything wrong with buying flowers, In fact, one might argue that buying flowers is a really wholesome kind of activity, but she refrained because she found that it gave her a chance to watch her mind and to see the desire for those flowers arise. And then after she continued on her way and didn't buy any flowers, pass away. She liked that sense that she didn't have to follow her desires. As she says in her book, life is easier without imperatives. So interesting lesson. So over the next week or more, you might like to try this too. Follow Sylvia's suggestion and choose something that you could give up for some period of time, maybe a week, maybe for the rest of this month, that you like enough so you'd notice its absence, but not so much that you or your family would really be in a your big level of discomfort and really struggling. And then see what you learn about the nature of desire itself. So something that's worth mentioning, I think just quickly, that Ajahn Suchito brings up in his book is how our meditation practice can be a help to unlink us from this kind of hamster wheel of wanting and wanting and wanting. Because it can show us that there are sources of joy and peace and contentment that don't depend so much on internal conditions, but come from within. And I think, if you've ever been on a retreat, you have a sense of how this is. When we're on retreat, we're in conditions where we have to do with, our do without our usual distractions. And instead of our comfortable bed, we might be sleeping in a bunk bed in a room with half a dozen other people. Maybe we don't even get anything to eat except juice after the noon meal. And yet, because of the way our practice has affected our hearts and minds, we might be filled with happiness. And this helps us to recognize that, maybe we don't realize all those things we think we need so much in order to be happy. So that's something else to think about. So, going on to the last point I want to talk about today. On one level, renunciation deals with understanding the limitations of sense pleasures. First, there are the times when we need to refrain from them because pursuing what we think will be pleasant could actually hurt us or could hurt other beings. And then the other aspect is that we begin to recognize we'll never be completely and permanently satisfied by pleasant sights or sounds or sensations or tastes or things, no matter how wonderful they might seem, because they just don't last. They change, they go away, sometimes they just aren't available to us. And if we don't accept that truth, we keep continuing to get caught up in craving, and we're going to suffer. There's no question about it. But the practice of renunciation can go further than that, to letting go not only of activities and things, but of our attachment to our ideas of who and what we are. Ajahn Suchito talks about this aspect of renunciation as first letting go of our effort to be somebody and to hold on to our views, especially holding on to our ideas of ourselves based on those views. And then there is the abandonment of the sense of self, the sense that what I call me is any permanent or unchanging thing. So these types of renunciation are really, this is a whole different level than giving up French fries or chocolate. It's a big thing. And I think for most of us, this kind of renunciation does not come easily. And it might not even make sense. So we can talk a little bit more about this, starting first with attachment to becoming. And Ajahn Suchito defines becoming as the appetite to assemble status, personality, role, and accomplishments for the enhancement they offer us. So when we renounce this, we're renouncing that whole idea that we need to be something more or something better. And this is really a challenge to our sense of lack and inadequacy, because it challenges not just the sense that we don't have enough, but that even more pervasive and painful sense that we aren't enough. And I think, you know, for most of us, it's the sense that we aren't enough that really keeps us chasing after possessions and recognition and status and so on. It's not so much the thing itself as this desire to become the kind of person who has that thing, who does that thing, the desire to be our idealized version of ourselves. You know, we're trying to prove finally that we really are worthy. And this way of thinking is so pervasive, and it invades everything we do. It even invades our spiritual practice. And it's hard to even begin to know how to renounce it. But maybe you remember from last week the story of the Buddha and Tapusa, where the Buddha said that to truly appreciate and be willing to practice renunciation, we need to recognize the disadvantages of our attachment to sense pleasures. And the same is true for our attachment to becoming, to views, and to our identity and sense of self. We need to feel the tension that arises in us around our worries about our self-image and our success and failure. And we need to feel that pain and doubt that comes with feeling like, I should be like that, but I'm not. Ajahn Suchito says that first we have to recognize all of this, really recognize it, and then let go of our blindness when it comes to this pain and all of what we're doing around self-view. And he also talks about equanimity as being really helpful here. So instead of trying to improve or fix or get rid of, a mind that's attuned to renunciation simply recognizes, this is the way it is right now. Making this acknowledgement and this emotional acceptance of where we're stuck in this becoming and in this self-view can bring us to a deeper place beneath the floods of desire or becoming or identification. And we can begin to release ourselves from that attachment to becoming. If we're aware of it, we aren't so much caught in it. So all of this is really a lot to work with. It's really a lot to take in. And yes, it is really challenging. Ajahn Suchito tells us that his teacher, Ajahn Chah, said that being a monk is knowing about letting go, but being unable to do it 90% of the time. And if he feels that struggle as a monastic, I mean, we shouldn't be surprised if we struggle too as lay practitioners. It's not easy. But maybe it helps to consider that it's not so much about giving things up as realizing that we don't need them after all. We can remember how Ajahn Suchito says that enlightenment involves dealing with and deconstructing with the sense of lack and releasing us from that sense that there's always something else we should be having, something else we should be doing, something else we should be right now. It's recognizing that this is enough right now. So I'd like to close with a poem by Wendell Berry, called What We Need Is Here. Geese appear high over us, pass, and the sky closes. Abandon, as in love or sleep, holds them to their way. Clear in ancient faith, what we need is here. We pray, not for a new earth, or heaven, but to be quiet in heart and an eye clear. What we need is here. So, thanks everybody for being here today and for your attention. And now we have some time for you to get into breakout rooms and talk a little bit about this subject of renunciation. Anyone who needs to leave now in this beautiful sunny day, I can understand it totally. And we're very happy that you were able to be here for our sit and talk, and very glad to have seen you. And for those who will be staying, I'll break you up into rooms for your discussion. And I'd invite you today to share anything you'd like about how your practice of renunciation has been going so far this month. You know, anything you've learned from it, maybe from noticing renunciation as you have practiced sila or generosity. And then, if you have time to share any thoughts you might have about the aspects of renunciation we brought up today, you know. About how it's a practice of learning about craving itself, and maybe even of learning how to renounce becoming an attachment to self. So now we have some time for you to share anything you might like to share about your group, what you talked about in your group today, or if you have any comments or questions you'd like to share. Please feel free to do that. You can raise your virtual hand if you like to let me know that you have something to say. Probably if you just wave your hand like this too, I'll see it because there's not so many of us here. Oh, okay. Shaina.
I've been thinking about this renunciation and how it shows up in my life. And what's helping me is that seeing it not as depriving myself of something, but giving it up for something more meaningful. And I'm still working on it to see how it shows up in my life, but that's really helping me. So I
Thank
wanted to share that.
you. That's really wonderful to hear. And I think it's a really probably good thought for the rest of us to have that attitude of not thinking of it so much as giving up, but as making space for something even better. So that's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that, and I'm really glad that that's working for you as you do
Thank
this.
you.
Oh, Sue. Yes.
Thank you so much for sharing that quote from, I've read it also from Ajahn Chah that you know what you need to be doing and you can't do it most of the time. I think that what you said about the desire for becoming, that's what I talked about in my group, that as I get closer to retirement and all the like practical pieces are there, the hardest thing is who I am running my business and all of that, all of the different self-view and feeling of importance and visibility and all of that, that I shared in my group that years ago I had an interview with Joseph Goldstein at a retreat, and was talking with him about selfing and identity. He says it's the very, very, very last thing to go. It's the hardest thing to work on. And so it kind of helps me be a little soft with this process that it's hard. It's anyway, just thank you. And I think we can all understand that this is not easy stuff, this renunciation. So that was it.
No, it is not easy stuff. And I think, as you say, Suze, this aspect of becoming, yeah, it's the hardest part. And I think, I know for me in my practice, it took a long time before I even had a clue what this was even all about. So that is really the most challenging. Yeah. But, you know, we keep investigating and looking. So thank you. Let's see, we got a question here from Lillian or Nikhil. I don't think Sumina has a question.
You're right. It's me. Piggybacking on what Sue said, I think I'm noticing. I also really appreciate you bringing that aspect of renouncing the self up, because I think for me sometimes renunciation, what arises is additional self. Because I like right now I have a chocolate here, and I decided I'm going to renounce the chocolate for a little bit. We'll see how long. And now I'm noticing how smug I feel that I've renounced this chocolate for a good, probably 12 minutes now. So I think that idea, just the renunciation of the identity and the clinging that we have to that self, is so powerful. I really appreciate you bringing that up. I don't think I'd seen it in that light before. So thank you.
Oh, good. And I want to thank Ajahn Suchito too, because he really was what made me realize that's an important thing to talk about. So thanks to Ajahn Suchito. Lauren?
Yes, well, one of my things that I've been working on is relaxing, because a teacher said to me that in his path towards awakening, he needs to, relaxing is like one of the first things, that it's kind of a ground. And so one of the things that's been helping me is one word kind of mantras. And I never know which mantra is going to help me relax. And one of the mantras, like, just like me, that was a mantra that helped me relax. And I didn't even know why it did, but I would just be, meditating or going to sleep, and I would just say, just like me. And I just could feel the opening. So I felt that there's a tension, a holding on that I'm doing when I say, not like me, they're not like me, and that's a tension. But the one that I wanted to bring up with relationship to your talk was good enough. So when I use good enough and I just let it sink in to my body and mind, I just see how releasing and relaxing that is, which tells me that I must spend a lot of time and a lot of energy with not good enough. So I just wanted to share that that lack that you talked about, and how it may be pretty subtle. You may not have any idea you're feeling that way, but really to pay attention to that not good enough, and try the mantra good enough. See if it changes your life at all. Yeah, just wanted to share that.
Thank you, Lauren. That's a really wonderful suggestion, and I can relate to what you're saying. It's funny, because I was also just reflecting how much energy I put into not good enough and trying to overcome not good enough. So I think we probably all have that, and a lot of times when we find ourselves slipping into these distractions so we can zone out, it may be because we depleted our energy trying so hard to be good enough when we think we aren't good enough. So thank you. That's a really good suggestion to use that as a mantra and remind ourselves that we are good enough. Thank you.
And Lauren, I just wanted also, I mean, Lyndall, tell people that the last Sunday of April will be adding another half hour to the sit of anybody who wants to just stay in the Zoom. So pencil it in, or nobody uses pencils anymore. Their calendar, I do it, but or put it in your phone calendar. So, because this is a really rich month, and I wanted to be sure that we announced we've been doing that once a month, and it'll be the on April 28th.
Oh, great. Good. Thank you, Suze. And now one last comment from Lillian or Nikhil.
Lauren, what you shared reminded me of Rodney's talk from last year, where he asked a question for a meditation. What am I bringing to this meditation? Like, what expectations? What do I think that this meditation should be like? And I think that for me, it plays so much into like having all these thoughts of, you know, yeah, like this meditation wasn't good enough, or I wasn't, you know, mindful of this, and, you know, the way I was thinking I should be mindful. And the other thing that he had talked about was having faith in our intention. And I think that's something that's been really helpful for me with being able to relax a little bit with, you know, it being able to trust that like that intention is there. And it will just, it's present, and it will bring you back to like mindfulness, and it'll bring you back to like the now. And so, yeah, you're sharing this reminder of that a little bit.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, I really like what you said about remembering that that intention will bring you back. That it isn't all about us being perfect with all of our efforts all the time, but the process will work. So thank you so much. Thanks everybody for your great comments. This is a really rich topic, and I think many of us will probably want to stay for extra discussion at the end of the month. So let's sit for just a moment to close, taking a minute to share the merit of our practice. Thanks everybody for being here today, and enjoy this gorgeous day. It's so beautiful.
Bye everybody.